Welcome to the first episode of the Spanish Journal of Psychiatry and Mental Health. Today we're going to interview Dr. Diego Hidalgo Macei, who is a senior psychiatrist and postdoctoral researcher at the Bipolar and Depressive Disorders Unit of the Department of Psychiatry and Psychology at the Hospital Clinic of Barcelona. His research career has developed through the Rio Ortega and Juan Rodés fellowships. Over the past decade, Dr. Hidalgo Macei has focused his research efforts on integrating novel technologies into the treatment of affective disorders. His leadership and collaboration in numerous national and international projects have resulted in more than 100 scientific publications in indexed journals. In 2016, his doctoral thesis, which also focused on this area, received a cum laude distinction and was awarded the extraordinary doctorate prize from the University of Barcelona. It was also recognized as the best doctoral thesis of 2016 and earned him the 2019 Young Researcher Award from the Spanish Society of Biological Psychiatry. His outstanding work in this field has been further recognized with several awards, including the Berta Saborit Award in 2015, Vive Award in 2016, Albert Jovell Award in 2017, and the Estia Chair Award in 2018. Dr. Hidalgo Macei also gained international experience as a postdoctoral researcher at the Center for Affective Disorders at the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology, and Neuroscience at King's College, London. So we are delighted to have him today in the first episode of our podcast. So welcome, Diego, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Miguel, and the whole journal. It's a real honor to be among the first interviewers in this podcast series. So I hope I have a good performance so the audience can engage with this initiative. So I have the honor and the pleasure as well, but thank you very much for the invitation. I think it's a great opportunity to be here and explain a little bit about our research.
So Diego, first of all, I'd like you to summarize the main findings of this very interesting study recently published in the journal, in the Spanish Journal of Psychiatry and Mental Health, titled Antidepressants Overuse in Primary Care Prescription Trends Between 2010 and 2019 in Catalonia. I encourage everyone to read it because it's very interesting and I think that it is very compelling.
Yeah, so thank you for the interest in this article. I have a little space in my heart for this article beyond the scientific part. Because I wrote it is when I was in the paternity leave while the baby was sleeping, actually, and analyzing, but also because it was a big challenge. So how was he born? The idea is a researcher, but also a soldier. I'm a psychiatrist. And here in Catalonia and many parts of Spain, as you may know, so Spanish people will know, we psychiatrists go to primary care centers once per week. Here in Catalonia, it's called the primary care support team, specialized support team. What we were seeing in primary care centers about referrals from GPs, general practitioner or family doctor, how it's called here, is that they were an astonishing number of referrals for all kind of reasons. So in the same waiting list, that it was very long, by the way, like 2 to 3 months, there were very severe people waiting in that waiting list. And there were a high percentage of people who were just a temporal thing, adjustment disorders, anxiety, so on and so forth. But with many of those people that were waiting for our appointment arrived, they were already on antidepressants. So we started to think about how we can make this system, this referral system, more effective. And the first thing was to know exactly what was going on with mental health care problems in primary care, especially in the GP consultation, not when they already arrived to the specialized to a specialist that we were as a psychiatrist there. And there was this big concern that since GPs didn't know how long their patient will wait to see a specialist, They will try to find something as quick as possible to relieve the suffering and the symptom of these people. And the most obvious answer was antidepressants. But that was the hypothesis. So we wanted to actually to know how exactly that was working at the consultation and in the whole Catalonia area. That is the data that we had. So we conducted this study, which methodologically was very simple, but it was based on a big data set that I will explain it later. But that was the motivation and the hypothesis behind what we wanted to determine with this data and this analysis.
And could you explain how you defined the concept of overuse of antidepressants in your analysis?
Well, actually, yeah, it's an interesting question because many times, the overuse in the title of the paper is actually the conclusion that we arrive at. So, and that gives me the opportunity to explain the methodology that I was mentioning before. So it's a very complex thing, and we had a very big data set. And that's why also not only in my heart, but in my brain, this article forms a part because it was very challenging to analyze. We had all the data, the electronic health record, prescription, diagnosis of all the patients in Catalonia that required specialized mental health care between 2010 and 2019. And we have the double of controls that didn't require. So there was almost 500,000 of people who required specialized mental health care and 1 million people that didn't require. So the first group was the whole group that required specialized mental health care. And the second was just a matched control group that didn't require. So we focused on this second group that was 1 million. And I was mentioning it was challenging because the data set was huge. It was 27 tables, around 35 gigabytes. So the computing requirements was huge. So we couldn't, at the beginning at least, it was the first adventure. There were many papers after this, but this was the first one, how to handle this kind of data. And we designed a very simplistic thing to answer or not the research question was, okay, so we compare it. How many diagnoses of people who didn't require specialized mental health care in primary care were made by GPs of mental health conditions? And we compare on how many antidepressants they prescribed during this time. And we basically compared from year to year how that increased or decreased. And that's what we found and what we assumed that it was an overuse because, and this is already the conclusion, I don't know if I'm advancing too much, but what we found after the poll analysis is that, okay, so mental health care conditions that were had an indication for antidepressants in those 10 years increased 50%. But the antidepressants prescription increased about 400%. So there is a big gap that, I mean, for what they were using the antidepressants. So we assume that it's an overuse. And I will delve the, so this is a big conclusion, but then I will spend a little bit about the limitations and why we can have to take this up with a pinch of salt.
Of course, I think that we have to take this into consideration because I think what limitations did you encounter when using electronic health records to identify diagnosis and link them to prescriptions? Because do you think some patients may have a psychiatric diagnosis that simply wasn't recorded in the medical history or was registered using a different term, such as an acronym? I'm not familiar with the tool you use to analyze medical records, so I don't know how well it interprets synonyms or abbreviations. Sometimes, due to time pressure, we doctors, we just write MDD, you know, like instead of major depressive disorder, or use other short forms. I ask because a third of the prescriptions, more or less, couldn't be linked to a clear psychiatric diagnosis, but perhaps that's simply due to the diagnosis not being properly documented. Or as you mentioned in the limitation section, maybe the antidepressants was described for another indication, such as fibromyalgia, neuropathic pain, or insomnia.
Yeah, you already, Miguel, mentioned many of the limitations, but when you work with this big data set and electronic health records, there are plenty of them. So there is a big assumption on many steps of the way. In this specific paper, what the GP diagnoses, we cannot say, well, they are good at diagnosing mental health conditions or not. The reality is that in comparison to us, that we have between half an hour to an hour for a first appointment, they have 7 to 10 minutes in this country. So we cannot blame them if they don't do a precise diagnosis. They do the best that they can with the time that they have. So that leads us to what you were saying. I mean, we don't know if actually the diagnosis were correct. The advantage, I will say, is if they wrote a medical, any kind of note in the patient's record in that appointment, they had to link to a ICD-9 or 10 diagnosis. That's mandatory, which is a big advantage. But of course, you can just write something and just put any kind of diagnosis, especially if you're in a rush. And we know that we do many times that, especially if you don't have time. That's one big concern. The other part is, okay, you prescribe things, but you don't know if the people, the electronic health records are not telling you the whole story. They actually, the patients took the prescription. They were prescribed, but you don't know about that. Then you already mentioned another part that is the part of the story. I mean, what about if the patients were already in the private sector and they just came to a GP for the prescription? We don't know that. I mean, that's a gray area that we don't know, that we can just assume things because we have a lot of data and we can assume things. But those probably, there is a percentage of these situations all over the place. And there is an other situation that we don't know, and you already mentioned it. Antidepressants are usually prescribed not only for depression or anxiety, things that have an indication, but they are prescribed off-label for insomnia. Trazodone is quite common here, even if you're not anxious or you have an insomnia. Many GPs do prescribe that. Mirtazapine as well. For chronic pain, we have tricyclic antidepressants prescribed. For fibromyalgia, we have duloxetine off-label without an indication in Europe, at least. But yeah, there are a lot of these kind of things that could inflate things over prescription. But, you know, this is a huge gap. I mean, we are talking about 400% increase in those year by year. So it could be 50% that we can assign to these limitations, but it cannot be explained by the huge percentage that we have seen. And there are many other limitations, but I will say that you already mentioned it, and these are the main ones that we can actually assume. And there is also another thing. If you read the article, there was a thing that we don't know, but for some reason, this was the gap during the COVID. And you see that there was a huge decrease in antidepressant prescription in 2018, and then an increase again. Why this happened, nobody knows, because this data is handed by the public administration to us without any explanation. But theories, hypotheses, and some non-official explanation is that when the electronic health records are registered, it's not that today that's the data. There's a phase of this that's called consolidation. So they check that the next year, and then it will be recording the database. So it seems that there was some issue with the COVID pandemic, that there was a delay in the consolidation of data. But, you know, this is the limitation that you have when you work with this kind of data, that you cannot control this.
However, I mean, despite this leading inconvenience and some of the limitations don't depend on you and you cannot control them, the big picture is very interesting, and it's great analysis that you have done. I think that it gives us a great view of the big picture. I think it's very interesting, and this is like more like it's kind of an epidemiological study. I mean, it's kind of with a public health perspective. So now, I'd like to ask you like more like your personal opinion from your clinical experience. Don't you sometimes feel that for doctors, it is harder not to prescribe or not to diagnose than to do so? My impression is that some patients, when told they don't have a psychiatric disorder or don't need an antidepressant, feel that their suffering is not being validated. It seems that if we don't assign them a diagnostic label, they think we are downplaying their pain. What's your opinion on this?
Absolutely. So I think that we all psychiatrists have been in that situation when the patient desperately comes to your appointment, are in a very acute, stressful situation and demand solutions and a diagnosis. And if they walk out of the consultation without that, they feel disappointed, angry, frustrated. So, but we, I think, and I defend a lot of GPs and family doctors, we have 1 hour to convince the patients otherwise. We have other resources. We have more access to psychology. GPs don't have that. So in 7 minutes, they have to convince the patients that they are doing something for them. And when you mentioned this epidemiological paper, it's also a sociological paper because it's not also about the health system. It's about the society. And the need that we have nowadays that we don't want to be in distressful situations. We don't want to feel bad. We don't want to be sad. We want immediate solutions to that. And it's about a lot about this research field that is not mine. It's about resilience as a society. And what's going on with the society that we need that and we cannot tolerate any kind of pain. But this and many times this the paracetamol of mental health is antidepressants, and people see that. I mean, for on one hand we are prescribing them. On the other hand, we are also defending them because they have a huge and very good safety profile, very few adverse effects. So people say, why are not you giving me instead of I'm suffering because I have a divorce, a bad family moment. And you know the theory. You know that thing, the patient will adapt to that thing the following weeks or the following months, and they will be fine without antidepressants. The huge amount of them, there was a percentage that genetically might make the trip to an MDD or an anxiety disorder, but the vast amount of them, they will improve on their own or seeking family support or psychology that we don't have because, or they don't want to, or is they have to pay for that. So the most basic solution is antidepressants, unless we find other solutions. And that's the basis of this project that I didn't mention at the beginning, is not only to optimize this. This was the first paper of the PRESTO project. That is a project that how to make this system or to guide GPs on when to prescribe, not prescribe, and give other resources to the GPs. And in the PRESTO platform, what we do, we are testing, is a decision support tool for GPs that they will say, okay, this patient is severe enough, prescribe antidepressant and which antidepressant. But for the vast majority of people that they're just going through a stressful period of their life, it's not that you're not giving them. We developed a smartphone app that have evidence-based CBT contents for the patient, mindful contents that not only will treat them, so they will not walk out of the consultation without nothing. They will walk out of the consultation monitoring their symptoms and treating their conditions, their symptoms, all kind of insomnia, anxiety, so on. And that's medication without being an antidepressant. But that's the psychological treatment that we don't have access in public healthcare system, and the patient cannot pay probably. So we are giving them in a form of an app. And there is also this, and this is the last thing of the Plestor platform, because that's another topic, another podcast, is that don't do nothing. Don't do nothing. Just reconfort the patient, look them in the eyes, reassure them that they will be better. If they need, they are doing through going through a bad moment, a psychosocial resource, group therapy, and we provide them with the direction and the address of where to go if they are going through a divorce, arrestment, stress at work. So give something, always give something. But as I said, don't downplay what they are going through, because they are coming for a reason. And the worst things we can do and GPs can do is that just downplaying and say, no, that this is going to be fine. No, it's something, but probably won't require antidepressants, but there are other options.
Dr. Hidalgo Macei, it has been a pleasure. And I encourage all of you, really, please read the article, because not only is very interesting, but it also might help is psychiatrists that are training or our colleagues discuss topics that arise from the article. Because as Dr. Hidalgo Macei said, there are a lot of cultural and a lot of topics that can be discussed from this article. So I really encourage you to read it. So thank you very much, Dr. Hidalgo Macei. It has been a pleasure, and congratulations for your career in general and for this article in particular.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It has been an honor, and thank you for having me in this first edition.